right, St. Louis, here we are, hour two of the Home Improvement Show. Yes, that means we have a whole hour left for everybody. What do you have that you need accomplished at your home? What kind of advice might you need trying to get that accomplished? Let me know. Let's chat about it. 314-436-7900 finds me right here. We've got plenty of time, and the lines are wide open for you. Again, 314-436-7900. So kind of ended on a note about my door job and replacing doors at my home, and the whole do-it-yourselfer thing can be hard. It's nice if you can get people to do stuff for you just because of getting to it, timelines, you got everything to do. It's just not your job to do. So trying to find the time is not easy for all of us. And so today I actually have a friend of mine helping me out. He's actually working on my doors right now on the outside of my house. And you might wonder, I'm sure the question's coming up like, well, but I thought all four of these doors got installed and we got the last fourth one put in, the big double door, took two of us to get that thing muscled around and put into place. So they all got put into place with the door in, the brick mold around the outside, and the vinyl siding, J channel all around it, that it, you know, that door fit right in there and fit right in between that J channel. And so most door installers at that point, they're good. They're done. They caulk that brick mold trim to the J channel, and they're like, all right, you're good. Everything's great on the outside. Do what you're going to do. And for mine, and for what we do all here at Mosby all the time, looking at where these doors are, how much exposure do they have, and if you do have vinyl siding around them, which is a little bit easier to take off and put back. So I've got my buddy Joe at my house right now, and he's taking off the siding around the doors that are put in, and we're capping the brick mold trim and the trim outside door jamb, everything from the weather stripping around. We're capping that with white aluminum coil metal so that I'm not going to have to worry about painting that trim, that frame. So my only painting is the actual door panel itself that opens and closes. But when I wrap that metal around all that trim, here's the trick. You take that siding off of the wall, and when you bend that metal back towards the wall, you do an extra bend. You kick that out onto the wall. What we call, we'd call it like creating a nailing fin. So you can nail that to the actual sheeting of the wall. And then you put flashing tape, the 4-inch wide, it's kind of expensive, nasty butyl-based black flashing tape that you stick that to the wall and go on to that nailing fin. Now I'm protected from any water that's behind that wall, behind that vinyl siding coming down. It stays out. And then at the top of the door, even once the siding's back on, where that J channel wraps around that door, so now I don't caulk that J channel to the top of that door. And the reason for that is when water gets in there and it gets all around that J and that vinyl siding and through the seams and everywhere else, it won't be trapped and it can get back out. So people think they're keeping water out by caulking it, but really you're keeping some of the water out by caulking it, but the other water that gets in, you're trapping it inside and it can't come out. So now there's no caulk. Water runs right back out, and that door and that wall is protected 99% better than it was. And if you have a house wrap, now you wrap that house wrap on that wall over top of that trim at the top and that flashing tape at the top, and you get a really good water goes where you need it to go protection over the top. This is going to last for years. That's the quality. That's the job that we're after. But hey, we've got Tom on the line here. Let's see what's going on with Tom. How can we help you, Tom? Nope. We just lost Tom. There you go. Well, Tom, give us a shout back, and we'll get you on as soon as you can. I think he's trying to get back in now, and next on the list after the break might be some of that procrastinating stuff we were talking about. But, hey, we got Tom back. Tom, you there?
Yes.
All right. Good to hear from you. What's going on?
Yeah. So we have redoing a 170-year-old farmhouse, and the summer kitchen, the old original pine floors, I can't refinish because they've had asbestos adhesive and lead paint on. So I want to cover it. Since it's going to be just used as a storage room, is there any problem if I put a vapor barrier down and then put like ACX or BCX plywood and then stain and poly that in terms of will that work?
So I guess the question I would ask is what is underneath the subfloor, that old pine that had the glue and all the stuff on it? What's below that, do you know?
Below the the 1x4 pine?
Yes. Is it actually like a basement? You can look up and see the underside
it's a
of
crawl
it?
Space. There's a crawl space.
It's a crawl space. Okay.
Yeah, but not a crawl space I can really get into. So I can't put a vapor barrier on the ground.
Yeah, and that would be ideal. So what I would probably recommend is then I would probably go to no vapor barrier at all.
Okay.
Because what would the concern would be, and this is a theory, and I've put like moisture-resistant glue and stuff on concrete to try and hold moisture in when you're like gluing a floor to it, or it's really knowing what's underneath it. So if you're getting any type of moisture in that crawl space and those moisture vapors are trying to escape, if you put a moisture barrier, a vapor barrier between those floor layers, it can hold the moisture there and rot out that floor below you even quicker than if you didn't.
Okay.
So, yep, you might let more moisture vapors out by not having a barrier at all than creating one. So, yep, I would just leave the barrier out of it, go with your plywood and floor on top of that.
Okay, that way. Well, we're going to use the plywood as our finished floor.
Okay.
And that way, if I don't put a vapor barrier, I can then also use adhesive on besides nailing it in.
Yes, you can. Yep.
Okay. All right. That sounds great.
All right. Perfect.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call, Tom. For anybody else out there, let's get something going for you. What kind of questions, thoughts, comments, concerns? What's happening at your house today? We're going to jump into a break, but when we get back, we'll be ready for you. 314-436-7900. Plenty of time for everybody. Don't go nowhere. We'll be back after this. All right, welcome back. Welcome back. Home Improvement Show. Rich Orr is here for you today. And, we can get to whatever you need, what you have going on. Any questions? Let's get to it and see if we can help you out. 314-436-7900. Finds me right here. We've got plenty of time for everybody. And looking at Tom's question about his floor, I'll tell you, what I've seen quite a bit of that kind of leads me into some of this is they came out years ago with this product for basement floors, and it's like an oriented strand board plywood that they put like a plastic kind of vapor barriered surface underneath these 2-foot by 2-foot squares. And you can put these together and lock them together, and it's great for a basement floor on top of concrete, your concrete floor. And so if you're getting any moisture, vapor, anything happening, the bottom of this system is a barrier, and it's plastic, and it won't rot, and it'll kind of keep things down. So then they go the floor on top of that. And here's what I've seen happen a lot is those floors are sloping towards a drain. A lot of them are at an angle. So what I've seen a lot of kind of DIYers do is they'll frame a floor on top of that concrete with some 1x pine wood or some 2x4s, and they'll kind of frame it up flat. And then they put a system like this on top of that, and then they put their floor on. And then I'm in their home 5 years later because the actual floor system that they built underneath it has rotted away, because now you've got this vapor barrier and it's holding all that moisture down. And if you do have a lot of moisture in the ground, a lot of moisture underneath that concrete, and it's trying to get that moisture, what we call moisture vapor, out. Once it comes out, it can turn into moisture in the air. And with humidity and everything else in our area in St. Louis, this happens quite a lot. So now you've got a rotted out thin subfloor with this floor kind of bouncing around. And I'm basically explaining to them that there's really no great way to do that. There's no great way to redo that and go, okay, we'll just put it back together. You're kind of into that same system, because that's really, there's nothing made for that vapor, for the framing. A lot of composite materials are not necessarily made for a structure to like hold a floor, like a floor joist. And so, yeah, it's just a bad situation where if it would have just sat directly on the concrete, it would have probably been fine for much, much longer. But because you're building wood in between, you're trapping moisture in there and you're rotting it out, and your vapor barrier is just holding that in there. And we see that in so many situations around the house, kind of like the capping that I'm doing on the outside of my doors. Well, if you cap that and you don't wrap it around the wall and you don't flash tape it, and water starts getting into that capped area, again, it's kind of just like that vapor barrier. Now you've got a piece of metal holding moisture into a piece of wood behind it. The most common place we see this quite often, and the first place most houses see it when they're under that condition, is above the garage. The trim above the garage, they cap it with metal, but they don't flash it to the wall. They don't keep moisture out. So the rain drives in, moisture gets in there, water gets in there. It rots out the piece of trim until eventually that piece of metal just kind of falls off. And now you've got a rotted piece of wood without the metal. There's nothing to nail to. We see it a lot with the fascia board, with the gutters. I've got one right now that we're doing that the gutter just, I looked at the house on Monday, and then all of a sudden on, I guess on Wednesday, he's calling back again saying, the front gutter wasn't like this when you were here, but now it's hanging off the house on the corner, and the wood behind everything's just rotted. The gutter won't even hold anymore. So we're looking at coming back, putting that all, putting new wood, putting new metal across it, doing that a better way. So even when you think about someone coming in and going, yeah, I can wrap all that, those fascia boards with metal, and then we'll put gutters on and you'll be fine. Well, there's different ways to do that. And most companies, they're gonna go fast. They're gonna put on just a straight L, slap it on there. And what we're gonna do is, when I look at something like that, kind of like flashing it to that wall, I'm gonna run that metal up to the roof shingle, but I'm also gonna bend it out, and I'm gonna create a drip edge with it, and it's gonna give the shingles some support, something to kind of rest on, but it's also gonna keep more water and moisture from getting in there behind that metal, because it's bent back, it's downhill. So anything needs to go uphill for like an inch to get in there. It'll protect from the gutters overflowing. It'll protect from wind driven rains much better than a straight piece of metal. And so there's differences in how all that happens. And even So my friend Joe that's helping me out today and doing all this work for me, well, he's used to newer construction type siding. For years he's been doing a lot of new construction. So the way I'm looking at doing this metal, I'm actually was kind of showing him this morning, here's some tricks on how to bend it like this to give it a little more character and just make it look a little better. But in a newer construction type of world, or the type of world where you're getting paid per square or per linear foot, and going fast is beneficial to the worker. That's the other circumstance where that can come in. Everything's flat, everything's straight. We do it like this. It takes half the time. He's actually having trouble kind of like, oh man, figuring it out and writing the measurements down. And we were joking about how by the time you get to the fourth door, you'll be so good at it, you'll wish you had more to do, but it'll take you four doors to really get the system down and understand how to do it. But from a remodeling perspective, coming in from where I kind of grew up and where I worked, it was more, it takes a little longer, but it looks a little nicer. It gives it more character. It's more of a remodeling thing. People are looking at that, and we're explaining that this is how we're doing it, and this is why it could cost a little more, because a little more investment, because you have more work. You're taking off the siding where others aren't. You're doing it properly where others aren't. You're making it look better with more bends and more stuff. So that just takes more time where others aren't. So that's where some of those differences come in. It's not all just, hey, we do great things. It actually takes more effort and time to do those great things. And the effort and time results in just labor rates today and how much people make and what it takes to get labor is the biggest component right now, the bigger component than it ever was for how you do things and how you get it taken care of. So reusing things, reusing products you take down can be more expensive sometimes than buying new products and installing new products, because that can be quicker and take less time, less labor, and then you just base on the cost of that product. Sometimes you're spending more to try and reuse something than you are to get something new, which then puts us into this whole, boy, we should recycle more, we should reuse more, we should save the planet, we shouldn't throw many things away. But we're kind of getting forced into that as an industry of, okay, but it costs so much more to do it like this, then now we have more products and old products to get rid of and not be able to recycle or reuse and just throw away. So now you look at the environment. So do you spend more to try and help and save the environment? There's so many decisions and thoughts into every aspect of how we remodel, perform the work, how we deliver services and goods, and how everything happens. So, hey, you want to know any more about any of that? You have anything going on in your house? We're right here. I can help you out today. Anything you need. We're going to jump to a break, but again, remember, 314-436-7900. Get you straight in here with me. Love to hear from you in the next segment. Between now and then, stay tuned. All right, we're back, St. Louis. We got half of an hour left for you. Plenty of time for whatever you need. 314-436-7900. We did get a call in a little bit earlier that was kind of went hand in hand with Felix's driveway future solutions and future ways to help keep the potting, the spalling marks and all that happening on the driveway. We were talking with Felix about sealing the driveway and should you fill those holes and all that, but really didn't touch on. So this call was a good reminder of what causes a lot of that happening. And the comment was, you know, rock salt, the salt snow melt, is really not good for concrete. And a good reason to seal your driveway is because even if you use the right type or better types of products that won't damage your driveway, you're going to drive through salt all over St. Louis, and then you're going to drive that up onto your driveway and into your garage with the snow, with everything stuck on your car. So even if you're doing the right thing, you may still get the damage caused by that from what you're picking up off of the roads. So not using just a typical rock salt. It's very common. It's very cheap. It works pretty well. It's what most of us had, but there's definitely other types of magnesium chloride and all these other ones. There's pet-friendly versions. I don't have all of the list of all of the types in front of me, but there's some ice melt out there that works good. It can work in very, very cold temperatures, and it can be pet friendly and driveway friendly and plant friendly and all of that for you. So figure that out. Do some research on that, and don't just use the regular salt, especially if you have not sealed and protected that driveway very well. That is definitely very, very important. So, but hey, we got Brett on the line here, so let's jump over here to Brett and see what's going on. Hey, Brett, how can I help you?
Hey, Rich, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling. What's going on?
Well, I have a 60-year-old ranch home with a bedroom in the northeast corner that's always like 6 to 7 degrees colder than the rest of the house. So I'm considering taking out those two outer walls of drywall and properly re-insulating with some rock wool. And I'm also living on a busy street, so I was thinking of doubling up on drywall layers for those two walls for some added soundproofing. So a couple of questions I had was, one, do I need a vapor barrier over the rock wool? And if so, what kind should I use, like plastic or paper? And then second, I want to know what your thoughts were on doubling up on the drywall layers. Is that a good idea, a bad idea, or a waste of time? What are your thoughts on that?
So, yeah. So for the vapor barrier, the only thing I would put with insulation in a wall like that is the paper barrier that comes on the insulation.
Okay.
Itself, because that's not a true like plastic vapor barrier. The insulation that's actually wrapped in like a plastic, or putting a piece of plastic over the studs after insulating, I would never do any of that.
Okay, and good to know.
Let that wall breathe. You want to get rid of moisture vapor through the wall and let it breathe that way. So definitely that. And then another thing I might recommend is definitely when you do that insulation, you want to make sure you get around your windows, make sure you have good windows, and make sure you're insulating around those windows with an actual like low expansion type foam that you can fill up and air block around those windows. Because if you look at that room before you even perform this, when it's very, very cold out with the infrared gun that's going to show temperature differences in like a photo, you'll see a lot of those differences are where air infiltrates around the window at the bottom of the wall. So when you do all this, kind of seal, caulk like the bottom of the wall to the floor.
Okay.
That's a good thing to do. If you could get your hands on an infrared gun and look around,
I do have one of those. So.
See what's happening. That may help you pinpoint where some of this is occurring. So that's another thing with the insulation. Now, as far as the soundproofing, the only thing I worry about with that is, one, if you do that, the thicker rock wool will help some. The two layers will help some. There is an adhesive you can put kind of between the layers that almost kind of creates a space. It's a very expensive, like, caulk for soundproofing.
Green glue I've heard about.
Yep.
Or,
yep.
Okay.
That'll help with that. But my big concern is if you do that and that's really helping the wall, that'll help a lot on the wall without a window, if there's a wall without a window.
Okay.
But the wall with a window, you're probably getting a lot of your sound through the window. And you might do all that work and go, man, this isn't that much different. Well, because the sound is, so then you might end up thinking, well, a really good soundproof window is going to be a triple pane window, not just like the double insulated glass, but a triple insulated glass is going to block more sound.
I did have laminated glass put in my windows when I had them installed about 25 years ago. So
yeah,
there is that extra layer for that.
Yep. But I have had that situation where it's like everything still comes in the window anyway, so you really didn't help
a whole lot
with that wall. So
okay,
you may just skip that part if you have a lot of windows.
Yeah, I've just got one on one wall. The other wall is completely windowless. So
so that wall might be worth the effort.
Maybe doubling that one only. And then, okay. And then as far as the rock wool, just put that in and put drywall directly over that with nothing else in between. That's fine.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes,
perfect.
Sir. All right.
All right. That should get me going. I appreciate your help.
All right. Yeah, no problem. Thanks for the call. Let's jump over to Bob here and see what Bob has going on.
Hey, Rich, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Good. Well, I called you last week and said we're like brothers in arms working on the same
project. Oh, that's right. Just talking about the doors again. Yeah.
With the doors, yeah. Well, I finally got the exterior looking good, and I'm working on the interior. And it looks like you said, I'm going to run out of time to do the front door.
Yeah.
So it may just have to be the inside. But I wanted to ask you and your listeners, you ever have any troubles with your spouse where the colors, you choose a color and they say, no, we don't like that. And then what do you know? 5 years later, they like the color that you picked out 5 years ago.
Well, I haven't come across trouble with them liking the color again 5 years later, but colors are very difficult. And it can be a lot of procrastination can come in to trying to pick colors because of the worry and the doubt in what if it's wrong? What if I don't like it? We've done this effort. And so people end up trying to choose through so many colors that it gets overwhelming, almost like a paralysis. And then you can't pick a color because you're looking at so many. So what I can tell you, probably one of my biggest stories was years and years ago. It was actually in our first house with me and my wife, and she wanted to paint our master bedroom yellow. And she had all these color samples of yellow, like the deck of just all these rows of different colors and different shades of yellow. And she couldn't pick a yellow, and she had her mom looking, and she's asking me, and she's like, and she finally looked at me and she said, well, what would you tell like a client? What would you tell one of your clients if they were trying to pick a color and they're having this issue? And I grabbed all the color samples and I just kind of flipped through them really quickly. And what I was doing is I was multiplying. I was going 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40. And then I finally stopped and I said, I would probably say to them, you have 45 shades of yellow here. You might not actually want yellow. And she just looked at me like, you haven't sped this process up at all. And I'm like, well, but it's true. Like maybe yellow's not going to work. And so I would say we ended up with kind of like a tan maybe or a beige instead, with maybe a hint of yellow in it, but never actually got like a yellow color.
But you're not going to believe how many gallons of white paint I bought to change the color when she, said, I want this custom tint. You know what I mean? And then we get it and I'll apply it and she'll say, I don't like it. It's too dark. So it's like I'm throwing white paint mixing in with it, and I don't know, you know, I had to mark it all off, you know, all the different buckets. So yeah. And I said, I'm not buying another gallon of paint because today's prices, the paint is expensive, and you know
it is.
You know, I'm a waste not want not person. So I said, I'll figure out a way to use this stuff, and it always worked out really good.
Yeah, that's good. We did the same thing in our laundry room with some color called hummus that we thought would look good. And as soon as the first coat went on and we stood back, we were like, all right, let's go back to the paint store. Let's get the paint chips out. But hey, Bob, appreciate it. Yeah. Love the conversation. Got to get into a break
here. You have a good one.
You have a great one, too. Alan, if you could hold on for a couple minutes through a quick break. We'll get to you as soon as we return, right after this. Okay, here we go. Final segment. This is always the quickest and the shortest. So let's go straight to Alan and see what is going on and how we can help. You there, Alan?
Hey, I'm here.
All right. Thanks for hanging on through the break. What can we do for you?
Thanks for taking my call. And I have a question about my pole barn. I want to insulate. And don't know if I need some vapor barrier or just what. It's basically the pole barn, 6x6 posts, 2x6 girders or 2x4, some of them. And so I have an airspace between the metal steel, the scallop part, of about an inch and a half. And I wondered if that was just a good insulator to leave that airspace if I was thinking of putting rigid foam board to my girders there, you know, something like that. Not a real fan of spray foam, but I'm looking to have less cost also. So I was just kind of looking at some 4x8s or 4x12s, inch and a half or 2-inch rigid foam board.
Yeah. Yeah, so that airspace with that foam board will be fine. And that's probably a good thing. And that foam board will kind of work as a vapor barrier. So I don't think you would need a separate vapor barrier.
And so should I get the foil type foam board, or can I just use the plain? Or, you know, they have them where you have two different surfaces if you want.
Yeah, I would use the plain polystyrene. It's got that, like, kind of film on it, on that outside edge. So I would just use that, and that should work good. And I guess in a pole barn with the temperatures and that, they're probably less worried about the vapor barrier and the steel and the breathing and all of that in a pole barn than I am a residential wood framed, typical constructed house where I would never use a vapor barrier.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The next question was having to do with, of course, the siding is scalloped. So the bottom still has the holes at the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And would I just seal that up with a little bit of foam to keep the mice and rodents out? Or is that not I still want to let that vapor get out of there if I could.
Yeah, and that's the problem with closing up all sides and all of that is I would leave those holes to let any moisture that does get created to be able to get out of there. It's the same with brick and all those other surfaces. Those weep holes are there for a purpose, and I would leave them.
Okay. And if the mice decide to move in, they'll just have a nice little condo, I guess.
Just put some mice. Yeah, when you hear them, put some poison out, control, traps, whatever. Yep, just handle them as it happens. But I think you'll be better off letting any moisture that accumulates there come back out. It's kind of like I was talking about at the top of my doors. Like, you don't caulk that trim at the top because you want that moisture, that water to come out of there. You don't want to trap it in, and that's the same circumstance.
Yeah, okay. Well, the big question was the airspace. I had heard that airspace was a good insulator.
Yes.
Otherwise, I could put the foam right next to the metal, but I thought, well, it's easier for me to put it up using the girders that are there and leave that airspace as it is.
Yeah, exactly. And if you do get an airspace there, because if you think about air is the best insulator that exists if you can keep it from moving. So if you think about a window with double pane glass, And that air never moves. They put the argon gas in there, whatever, and it never moves because it's 100% sealed. You can have two pieces of glass a half inch apart, and that is almost the same insulation value as like a wall.
Okay.
You know, it's amazing, but it's not quite as good, but it's way up there, and it keeps your house tempered well. So, yep, that airspace is a good thing to have. Seal it up and try and keep the air from moving, and you'll do really well.
All right. And would I worry about trying to close up the top of the scallops to make it more so the air wouldn't move?
On the interior, if you could, that might be a good idea.
Okay.
Just to kind of try and keep, yeah, just keep too much from moving inside there.
All right. Well, I sure appreciate it, Rich. And I think that's what I'll do.
All right. Perfect. Glad we could help out. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And we're coming pretty near to the end here. So I would bring up real quick that we did have a question come in, not live, but come in last week about how to choose good quality cabinets. I am having one of our designers on with me on December 13th. She is a cabinet guru. She is the expert guru on cabinets. So on that day, we can talk a whole lot about that. What I would say briefly about it is the company is as important as the cabinet. Who's building the cabinet and who's installing the cabinet and how much of they work together and how, because a lot of it, you can get all the best quality type of materials. If you don't put it together well, you don't put it together right, it's not going to turn out well. And if you don't install it well and you don't install it right, it's not going to turn out well. So check reviews, but also look at the company and how they're going to back it. But for now, hey, had a great time, great conversations. Appreciate it all. Be good to each other. Be good to your homes. And I will talk to everybody next week.